League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
You're listening to The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
People say I am the best boss.
You can find us on Twitter at SB Nation Radio and call in at 1-800-777-2907. Here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
There are always big moments in history. You can look at them and say, do you remember where you were when you heard about something, whatever it was? Do you remember where you were when OJ was in the white Bronco? Do you remember where you were when
the Tyrannosaurus Rex crossed the street? Don't do that to me.
No. Do you remember where you were the first time you heard Carla Dawson? I mean, I'm sure that's what a lot of people think. Chris Tubbs certainly does. But I can ask you this. Do you remember where you were when the term wardrobe malfunction was first invented? Do you remember where you were?
You're going to be so jealous.
Janet Jackson, where were you when the wardrobe malfunction happened?
Section 120 at what was Reliant Stadium. I'm not even kidding. It was my first Super Bowl in person.
And you saw everything transpire very clearly, right?
You saw the malfunction.
Firsthand.
I did.
Really?
It was so exciting. And not that part.
Really? Do tell.
No, I had a single ticket that my husband gave me, and I was sitting, he was very worried that I would be kind of lonely. Like, what am I going to do? I had 20 friends by the end of the game.
I'm sure you did.
Well, I had no wardrobe malfunction, let me be clear.
That would be nice to know as well. But I bring it up because, of course, there alongside Janet Jackson was Justin Timberlake, and announced this week is that Justin Timberlake will it again return to be the singer for the Super Bowl this year.
Chris, were you just giving us a little flavor?
He was clapping. He loved JT.
Oh, are you kidding? Justin Timberlake he's one of the best performers I've ever seen in person.
I agree.
By far, he is absolutely one of the best all-around performers. And to hear that he's going to be performing at Super Bowl 52 in my home state, in my home city, in my home stadium.
Oh, you are fired up.
Man, it just, only thing that would be better is the Vikings playing in it. But
no, the only thing better would be if Janet Jackson were to return with him.
You think they'd bring him back as a combo?
Yeah, bring him back.
That would be awesome.
We're still talking about it after all these years.
You got to bring Sexy back, and Sexy includes Janet Jackson.
Absolutely.
There we go. Oh, I love that.
And Carla was there firsthand to report it and tell us.
I was there.
All right. We're going to touch some college football when we return. We're going to look at all the top teams and the big wins and the shakeout. Who's really emerging in college football? This is David and Carla.
The Boss and the Gloss continues now on SB Nation Radio with David Gao and Carla Dawson.
So one great thing about college football.
Just one?
Well, one, many great things, but each week there's some big revelations. Now, a week ago,
got some JT going in the background.
Justin Timberlake,
I love it, Chris.
He will be in Minnesota at the Super Bowl and the halftime show without Janet Jackson.
Maybe.
Maybe
she'll be a reveal.
It's a surprise. Maybe it's going to be one of those, like, oh my gosh, here comes Janet Jackson out of nowhere.
Right, like down from the ceiling, or, you know, like Lady Gaga did in Houston.
That would actually be fantastic.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
That would be awesome.
That would be so. See, now I'm getting goosebumps.
But back to college football. So, a week ago, it seemed like everybody got upset. There were a lot of upsets in the top 10. This week, not so much. I mean, USC did fall, but for the most part, the top teams stayed where they were.
Took care of business.
Yeah, they took care of their business. I will say, though, that when I look at the top teams 2 through 8, I think a couple of them are ripe to fall.
Okay, tell me.
Well, let's start with Penn State, number 2. Penn State, with an impressive win over Michigan, give them due credit for that win. And Barkley looks great. I mean, he may be the Heisman Trophy winner this year. But Penn State's going to have to now run the table. They beat Michigan. They're going to face Ohio State next year and then Michigan State. I don't think any team this season has won 3 straight games against those kind of opponents. If they pull it off, tremendous, but I don't think they can pull it off.
No, that's definitely the trifecta in the Big Ten, and they're going to face them one right after the other for sure. But the Michigan game, not as much of a surprise as I thought, because basically Michigan's offense is inept. You know, with I know they lost their quarterback, Spate, and now they've got O'Korn, who's from University of Houston. But that offense isn't doing anything, and they were touted as this champion caliber defense coming into the game, you know, doing a college football high, allowing 225 yards roughly per game and almost 4 yards per average. That's what the defense was holding. Penn State went for 506 yards of offense and averaged over 8 yards a game, 8 yards a play during the game. So, you know what? Michigan's defense really wasn't what it was billed to be either. I think Michigan was highly overrated, and clearly the committee thought so too because they dropped out of the AP Top 25.
Yep, they've taken a big fall. Now, Penn State goes on the road against Ohio State this week.
That's going to be tricky.
That's another challenge. I mean, playing Ohio State in their ballpark, it will be a really great matchup.
What's been neat about Penn State, though, and I think we will see this really being challenged against Ohio State, is that their offense is not just running back Saquon Barkley. They have a very balanced attack. Trace McSorley, goodness gracious, has been unbelievable. And so the teams are double-teaming Barkley. It opens up the passing game. You know, they really are – they have a very well-rounded offense. So we'll see how it stacks up against JT Barrett and the Buckeyes.
Okay, let's look at number three, Georgia. They are still undefeated, 7-0. Their one win of real quality was over Notre Dame by
20-19, yeah.
Yeah, and that win actually looks better this week than
sure
it did
does.
Just a few weeks ago. But I still think they haven't faced much competition. I think they're ripe for a fall as well.
Right. I think people, you know, Kirby Smart, who came out from under Nick Saban's staff, head coach at Georgia, he is great, and he's going to do great things with the program. And I think people expected him to be good. This good? I'm not sure. There's still room to fall. We're still 2 weeks away from, or a week away now, I guess, from the first rankings, a week or two. I can't remember. But so we'll see what happens. They were off this week, so we didn't have a whole lot to talk about. So we'll see.
Well, they do have a November 4th matchup against Auburn. That's their toughest game in the regular season. But it's certainly not out of the question that it would be Alabama and Georgia in the SEC championship game.
Mm-hmm.
Number four, TCU, the highest ranked Big 12 team. They actually surprised me. I did not see them at all finishing in the top 20 even. And yet they stand at number four today.
You know, they have a 19-0 home winning streak under Gary Patterson. That's incredible. And again, I know I talked about this last week, and I think even the week before. I love quarterback Kenny Hill. He 5 touchdown passes. Now, it was against Kansas. Kansas managed 21 yards of total offense. Did you hear that? 21 yards. My little multi-poo could amass 21 yards.
You mean 21 yards in the first quarter, right?
I think they wish that was the case. But TCU did what they needed to do.
Yep.
43-0. Kenny Hill, 5 touchdown passes. He has had to kick and scream and grind, and he had to go down. You know, he had to go down before he had to be humbled before he came back up coming from A&M. He's done it. I like what I see. He's hungry.
Okay, ascending into the top 10, Notre Dame, with the big win over USC, your alma mater. I tell you what, so that game probably told us more than anything, or it certainly had the greatest impact, because it knocks USC out of contention. They're not going to the college football playoff, that's for sure.
Yep.
Notre Dame now is in the consideration set. They've only got the one loss to Georgia by 1 point, and they're now ranked number 9 in most polls.
You know, before this win, I would say on Notre Dame's resume, this big spanking of USC, 49-14 at home.
Yep.
That's the biggest star on their resume. And the next star, it is the 20-19 loss to an unbeaten Georgia. Right now, that really looks great on their resume. Notre Dame ran for almost 400 yards on the ground. Now, I know my beloved Trojans are beat up, and they're beat up something fierce. But boys, this was so ugly. I could barely watch it. It really was bad.
If you were advising Sam Darnold, would you tell him to stay in college another year or come out at the end of the season?
Absolutely stay in college another year. He didn't have a full season last year. He's young. He's got a Brett Favre type of just sling it mentality, and he is so talented. But I think with the staff at USC and Clay Helton as the head coach, take another year of that kind of coaching. And you need that. I mean, he's really losing a lot of confidence. I mean, first snap of the game is up over his head. He can't hang on to it. Notre Dame, you know, recovers. First snap of the game for USC. I just think it will do him no good. He will Deshaun Kizer himself by coming out this early. It's not going to help him.
Right.
So stay with a great program. Stay with a program that can hopefully get healthy, because right now it's really, you know, patched. It's a patched in offensive line with a lot of young guys. The same for the defense, same for the receivers. They're really a beat up team. I'm not giving them excuses, but no reason for him to come out now.
Okay, the two Oklahoma teams, Oklahoma State and Oklahoma, with narrow wins over opponents that everyone thought they should beat more handily.
Looking vulnerable.
They both looked vulnerable.
They really did.
Texas took them to overtime, and then Sam Ehlinger with the throw that is sort of unexplainable, other than today's in concussion protocol. So Ehlinger with a Texas in range to kick the tying field, going to overtime, throws a pick to nobody.
On third down.
And it was just a brutal mistake. Perhaps he had a concussion. At the moment he's in concussion protocol, perhaps he just didn't have his wits about him.
You know, that throw looked like it was someone without his wits about him, because he really has been so great. But for Texas, that's two straight defeats to two ranked teams from their northern neighbor in Oklahoma. And even though they were close, and these moral victories don't do anything for you in the rankings. So Texas has got a ways to go.
Yeah.
But their defense, you got to credit them. They held the nation's number one offense in Mason Rudolph to one TD. Zero touchdown passes from Mason Rudolph.
No, and Mason Rudolph, James Washington, maybe the best combination in all of college football. And UT defense did step up. So Oklahoma snuck by. Look, Baker Mayfield with some heroics in the fourth quarter for the second week in a row, because he had to do it against Texas previously. Mm-hmm. Mayfield has delivered when he needed to all but 1 week, Iowa State.
And that was ugly.
Well, that was ugly.
So, yeah, he really did. He showed up with over 400 passing yards, my goodness, and four touchdowns in a much closer game that should have been over Kansas State. But I got to say, he did show up, 42-35 win. So makes him still in contention for the Heisman. However, I like the running backs in Penn State, Saquon Barkley. Stanford had a bye, but I love their running back, Bryce Love. He's getting a lot of love, and I'm going to give him my vote. So there's a lot of good people in the Heisman, and it changes every week, so it's exciting.
Lastly, Wisconsin still stands at number 5. They're undefeated. They played nobody.
Hello, cupcake schedule.
Cupcake!
I mean, they'll see some people, but not yet.
Yes.
Not yet. I mean, Maryland is not tough.
It's just hard because we're looking at polls already. We're trying to make conclusions. And to see Wisconsin at number 5, it just doesn't seem real.
No, I know. So we'll see as it goes along. A lot can happen.
So right now, your favorite Heisman pick, Saquon Barkley?
Bryce Love, running back from Stanford.
You want Love.
I do. I really do. I've been watching.
Give the woman some love.
Give him some love. Love is the answer. That's my slogan.
Fair enough. England Dan and John Ford Coley.
That's right.
She's quoted them here. When we come back, we're going to get an update on our Monday Night Football game. This is David and Carla on SB Nation Radio.
The Boss and the Gloss continues now on SB Nation Radio with David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Joining us now on SB Nation Radio is Phil Garner, Scrap Iron, a man who has 3 World Series rings. 2 with Oakland, 1 with Pittsburgh. He's also a former major league manager, including a stint with the Houston Astros. Phil, welcome into the show.
Thank you. Glad to be with you.
Well, great to have you. We, obviously, in Houston are very excited about this matchup, Astros-Dodgers. When you look at these two teams, some World Series, we look at the matchups and we think, well, maybe somebody snuck in there. These do look like the two best teams, don't they?
Well, certainly. I think... Yeah, people can argue every year that whether the best team got to the World Series or not. I've always said that when you play a 162-game schedule, you go through a round of 3 rounds of playoffs, and you're the last 2 standing. You are the best team by definition. So I do like them. I think our Astros have been a terrific all year, obviously. I did get a chance to watch the Dodgers during the playoffs. I'd not watched them at all during the season. And you had to be impressed watching them. They're a solid team as well, and they certainly hit their stride, and they're doing well too. So this should be a good matchup.
We're speaking with Phil Garner, three-time All-Star, three-time World Series champion. Phil, you played on the Oakland Dynasty teams from the 70s, went on to win another World Series with the Pirates. Then you were the manager that took the Astros to our only postseason appearance in the World Series in 2005. So with all the World Series experience in your blood, do you think the current Astros have what it takes to go into this postseason successfully?
No question about it. I thought that it was a tough call to come back home. Obviously, when you lose three games in New York like we did, we weren't swinging the bats well at all. We didn't look like we were going to wake up during that series. You know, once that turns against you in these games, it's all hard to turn the momentum around. But you got to give kudos to Morton and McCullers for just a terrific pitching job in our game seven. And our hitters, you know, they hit when they were supposed to. And, yeah, I can't say enough about Altuve. He's so much fun to watch. And I'm so happy for him. And I'm telling you, if he doesn't get an MVP this year, there's a conspiracy going on.
Hallelujah. I'm with you.
That. Yeah. Yeah. This should have been his second MVP.
We're talking to Phil Garner. Phil, you were on the We Are Family Pittsburgh Pirates, a team renowned for having great team chemistry. When you see the Astros, when you see Reddick dancing around in a Speedo with champagne being spewed all over his body and his head, do you think the Astros have some of that chemistry?
Well, I thought that was a pretty bad sight. I'm trying to get that out of my mind right now.
Sorry to resurrect it back in your brain, right?
Patriotism that you didn't want to see displayed in that way.
I didn't want to see that, no. And I know Josh from the Oakland days because I was a special assistant with the Oakland A's when he was in Oakland, so I got a chance to know him out there. He's a great kid. But there's no question I think there's chemistry there. And, you know, some GMs and owners will poo-poo that a little bit this year. You know, it's starting to be in vogue to say, oh, it's nothing but the numbers. But it's still a game involved humans, and chemistry matters. It's how teams click together. It's teams believing in each other. And I think this team has that. I clearly believe that they think if one guy doesn't do it, somebody else will. So, and that's invaluable. If you're on a club and you think you have to get it done, you press, and then once somebody starts pressing, everybody kind of falls in line. But when you feel like, hey, if I don't get it done, somebody else will, that sort of relaxes everybody, and they do have these comeback wins, and they do have these terrific games. So, and they played in the tough games. We had three of those games. All four wins were, well, the one win kind of got out of hand. We lost one, but we won one with a big margin, but they were all one play could turn it around. There were defensive plays, offensive plays, and great pitching that happened in each one of those games that we won that were really key. And that tells me that those guys are they believe, they play together. You know, great defensive plays required cutoff men being in the right position, good throws, and then good defensive end, good defensive plays on the end of those. So that was fun to watch.
It was fun. Phil, let me pick your brain a minute about pitching. So in this postseason, we're seeing starting pitchers being lifted sooner than I've ever seen it. And the average starting pitcher's lasting little over four innings, and the ERA is almost up to five. Like, what do you attribute as the reason for these seemingly short outings?
Well, I think managers have increasingly beefed up their bullpens. You know, if I go back just a decade ago, you had one guy on a team that may be throwing 96 to 98 miles an hour and or with a terrific slider, and he was usually a closer if he could throw strikes. Well, just look at every team now, and there's three or four guys out of the bullpen that are throwing upper 90s and with a, you know, wipeout sliders or knuckle curves or great pitches that get, you know, great changeups. So I think managers want to shorten the game. I think they tend to think that they get in that bullpen, the guy in the bullpen is going to give him everything he's got for one or two innings. And if he's got three guys down there that can do that, then he's going to go to them. And that's what we've seen. I think the trend started a couple of years ago, and you're seeing it more and more now. But I was really impressed with A.J. when he stayed with McCullers. I thought when McCullers started the eighth inning and he threw four straight balls, that might have been his undoing. I don't know if I'd had the patience to stay with him or the courage, but AJ knew what he was doing. He stayed with him, and he righted the ship and closed out in beautiful fashion. So I don't know if AJ is going to continue to follow that. You know, he might have had – he did it last year a little bit, but depends on how his bullpen is going to do. So if you believe in your bullpen, you're going to go to him quickly. If they're sputtering a little bit, you may tend to stay a little longer.
We're talking to Phil Garner. Now, Phil, you were manager of the Houston Astros in that 2005 team that went to the World Series. Talk about great pitching. You had Andy Pettit, Roger Clemens, Roy Oswalt on that team. If you could take that team versus this team in the Astros, how do you think they'd fare?
Well, we had a pretty good ball club, but I think this is a better hitting team, perhaps, than we had top to bottom. And you can't take anything away from Biggio or Lance Berkman. Certainly we had some guys that could do some damage. But top to bottom, this ball club, I think the numbers would bear that out. They're probably a better hitting ball club. I thought our bullpen was fabulous. Our pitching carried us, to the World Series. The Astros pitching has been fabulous. The bullpen's faltered a little bit in the second half, but you get in the World Series and maybe that'll change a little bit. So, getting Verlander was a great move, too. Anytime you put a Verlander, it's like having the Clemens on our ball club, and that gives you that extra life in your step when you walk out on the field. You puff your chest out a little bit more because he's the big guy on the block. So that helps a lot having him, too.
And it lifts the pressure off of Dallas Keuchel, too, who is feeling like the solo guy to carry the team as well. Phil, you managed not only in Houston, but in Detroit and Milwaukee. So putting on your manager's hat, what do you think about what happened with Dusty Baker and the Nationals being let go after two straight NL East titles? I mean, is this lease pretty short for managers? Is this warranted?
Well, I don't know what went on there. I don't know how the conversations were. I don't have any inside information to offer. I just know that from my standpoint, once ownership and management have, whether they lose confidence in you or they just want to change, it's better to go ahead and make the change and let things linger. If you do, you're a lame duck. The players will sense it. They will know it. The next thing you know, the worst thing that can happen is a GM come out and say, well, we're going to evaluate our manager here. Well, that's just a dead-end street. Unless you get really lucky, that it's hard to manage under those circumstances. So I would imagine that Dusty didn't want to be fired, but if they weren't going to back him up and extend his contract, that's the best thing that could have happened.
We're talking to Phil Garner, a three-time World Series champion. So, Phil, the matchups start tomorrow. Are you going to pick the Astros or the Dodgers, and why?
Oh, you're darn right I'm picking the Astros. I won't say I'll pick the Astros in four, but I love having Keuchel, who's on his normal rest. Verlander will get his normal rest, so I like having those two going for a start. Listen, if you're the Dodgers, you got to like having their guys, Clayton Kershaw is about as good as they come, too. So it should be a terrific matchup. And this is the one thing that you like watching, because the old adage in baseball is that good pitching will beat good hitting at any time. And there was a time there when I thought the Yankees pitching was better than what we had, or better than what our hitters were doing. But we managed to fight and scrap and win. So this is going to be another terrific matchup between good pitching, not good pitching, great pitching, and really, really good hitting. You know, we've had tremendous success this year against the best guys in baseball. So I'm anxious to see how it works out. I think our guys, Houston's clutch city. We're going to come through on this deal.
Fantastic. Phil, thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate it, and we will hopefully talk to you soon after the series.
You bet. Let's bring home a winner.
Absolutely. Four to go.
Take care.
Okay, true confessions. Phil Garner was on my Oakland A's, swinging Oakland A's posters in my room growing up. That's 72 through 75 team. He came in 73.
best second baseman. I just was crazy about him.
Yeah, that was that A's team that you loved, Scrap Iron, the player, and
right?
They had a great collection of talent.
Oh, my gosh. Sal Bando, Campy Karen Panares, Joe Rudy, Catfish Hunter, Vita Blue, you name it, they had it.
Fantastic.
World champs, three in a row.
All right, when we come back, it's the award-winning, highly acclaimed segment. It's the He Said, She Said segment with David and Carla on SB Nation Radio.
The Boss and the Gloss continues now on SB Nation Radio with David Gao and Carla Dawson.
What did you just say? What the hell?
It's time for He Said, She Said on The Boss and the Gloss.
That's right. This is the segment we've all been waiting for. Appointment listening, the highly acclaimed, award-winning, much anticipated He Said, She Said segment here on The Boss and the Gloss.
And it's not, we don't argue. That's the nice thing.
No, it's not.
Sounds like maybe it's a contentious segment.
No, the Boss and the Gloss don't fight.
We do not.
Never. Well, this actually begins.
You were just fighting right there when you were saying you never. You were just fighting over not fighting.
I guess we were.
Ooh,
maybe.
I think you're right. But we have this subliminal messaging where it says, I am the best boss in the world, right? In the intro.
Thank you.
So, you did that on purpose. I know, David.
All right.
But Chris, we believe it, right?
Absolutely.
There we go.
The first featured quote on the He Said segment. I'm going to give it to a duo, Jose Altuve and Justin Verlander. It was fun. We talked to Phil Garner, noting the chemistry that exists in the Astros locker room, knowing that they're so comfortable with each other that Josh Reddick will dance around in his bikini shorts. So listen to what Jose Altuve and Justin Verlander have said about each other. Back to back. Here they come.
I literally love Justin Verlander. You know, the way he goes out there made me feel like I have to go out there and play the same way he's doing it, you know. And you know, I know he's going out there and doing everything he can to win this game. So, you know, everybody in the lineup want to support him, want to score runs for him because we know the kind of guy he is.
Well, I think you saw, I don't know if you saw last night, but Jose Altuve and I, we literally love one another.
Well, it's a good thing Verlander has an attractive girlfriend in Kate Upton. Otherwise, this love would seem like a little over-the-top bromance.
It is a bit of a bromance, but it's a good one.
It's a good one.
And how great that in, seriously, 9 games with the Astros that Verlander has built that type of camaraderie. I mean, he literally loves Verlander.
Yes, he does.
That's a big proclamation. And Verlander's quote happened on the platform after Game 7, on the field, when he received his ALCS MVP. So that's a bold statement in front of everybody, and I think it's really great. It does speak to the chemistry that Phil Garner was talking about. Very, very cool.
Well, you've got a he said from a place where there's a lack of chemistry right now, at least a lack of
right.
winning.
I've got a he said, he said. Things are a shaken at Doak Campbell Stadium for Florida State. Chris, tell us what's going on there.
Not frustration, just hey, don't just different. Support. You know what I'm saying? There's no reason to be nasty. You shouldn't have said something. But at the same time, defending players and people you're with. I'm in charge of them. I love them. Like a father. If they say something to your family, you take up for them.
Okay, well, to set the stage for you, in case you could get that was a very angry Florida State fan as they got beat by Louisville. Third straight home loss for the Florida State Seminoles. And then the response was head coach Jimbo Fisher, our $44 million head coach, threatening fisticuffs with this fan. So the fan is calling for new coaches, new coaches, new coaches. And then you heard Jimbo Fisher's response in the press conference.
It's not always pretty with the he said segment here, is it?
No, this one isn't. This isn't as lovey-dovey as Verlander, that's
yes.
for sure. I think, you know, it's not. Hey, as a head coach coming off of a brutal home loss, when you went into the season, you took your Florida State Seminoles, your preseason number 3, and you are now 2-4, and just you're down in the dumps, your third straight home loss. I understand why he went at that fan, but you know what this reveals? Florida State fans are rightfully frustrated.
Well, they're restless. They are.
They're restless.
They're not accustomed to this.
No. You know, they have not missed a bowl game since 1981. They're used to the 27-1 James Winston era. They've been in the top 10 of the AP for the last three out of the last 4 years. 13 five-star players over the last four recruiting cycles. They expect big things in Tallahassee, and they are not getting it. So I absolutely understand, and I think Fisher's news conference where he says, hey, I know I shouldn't have done that, but, I mean, these guys are like a father to me, meaning his coaches. He is stubbornly loyal to a fault because, honestly, okay, his quarterback went down. His O-line is very average. His wide receiver core, they are not elite. Their defense is overrated. When you have 13 five-star recruits, this all needs to look a whole lot better. So I understand his frustration. He's getting $44 million. You got to be making some changes with your coaches. I don't know. What do you think? Do you think I'm being harsh?
Nope. I'm with you. Okay, duly noted. All right, let's go to the next one. LeVar Ball.
Oh, our friend.
He speaks out again. So give us the backstory.
So the backstory is, his beloved son, Lonzo, his debut with the Lakers. Oh, my goodness. 1 of 6 shooting, 0 for 2 from the field. Terrible. Three points, 4 assists in his debut.
He was shut down.
He was shut down by L.A. Clippers point guard, new point guard, Patrick Beverley, former Houston Rocket. And Patrick Beverley went to the L.A. locker room, outside the L.A. locker room afterwards, and called Lonzo Ball a weak, you know what, mofo, using all kinds of words.
Overrated.
All that kind of stuff. And LeVar did not take kindly to that.
Daddy was not happy. Mm-mm. So what did he say?
But see, this is what it is. When you're making this money, which the NBA got to do, it's better to say Lonzo versus another point guard than Phoenix versus the Lakers, because that's just Phoenix and the Lakers. Mm-hmm. But when you start matching him up with all these guards and what guard he playing next, everybody want to see what guard going to get the best of him. Tell Patrick Beverley that was his last interview for the year, so don't worry about it.
This guy is seriously delusional. But we keep giving him this certain, you know, media platform. But he even said at one point, LeVar says, who's Patrick Beverley? I mean, who knows who this guy is? He played all last year and nobody said nothing about him. Now we're looking at your first game. Why? Because Lonzo's name is attached to it. Okay, well, let me just pull LeVar aside for a second here and say, well, Patrick Beverley, if you know anything about basketball outside of the ball world, he's first team all defense, and he's probably the toughest perimeter defender in the league, at least one of the toughest. So I do think a few people know about him, not just people that were in Houston. But I think instead of acknowledging Patrick Beverley's talent, which he's a feisty guy, but he is talented, like Lonzo actually did, he credits Lonzo's celebrity status for this noteworthy game of Beverley's.
Oh, it could be a long year. I mean, look at this. Here we are. That was game one.
Game one.
And LeVar is already outspoken. The one thing I might add to that is, you've got to believe that everybody who defends Lonzo each week, each day, will bring his A game, because it's Lonzo, and you almost want to shut him down. You get a name for yourself if you do this. So in a long season, there are a lot of people who are playing maybe above average effort, but not all out effort every single night. But the night they come out to play Lonzo, the night you get to cover Lonzo Ball, you're going to bring your A game. So he better be ready for a long year.
You are exactly right. I mean, his opponents are bringing venom to their game when they are playing against Lonzo Ball. And the sad thing is, it has nothing to do with Lonzo Ball, who is really actually a talented kid who is just trying to do his job, and he's got a mouthpiece for a dad that really is bringing this kind of venomous, effort towards him.
No, I think the dad just made the whole season a lot tougher for Lonzo.
He sure did. He sure did. So, interesting. But, you know, Patrick Beverley isn't the first one to shut down Lonzo. If you remember, the last time we saw Lonzo Ball in college was in the March Madness. De'Aaron Fox took him to the hole for 38 points, just absolutely schooled him. So it's not just veteran NBA players who've been in the league a long time. But, you know, Lonzo's got his moments. And, you know, his dad just adds so much fuel to the fire. It's too bad.
All right. The next, he said, we'll do this one briefly. Eric Bledsoe plays for the Suns, and his big quote of the week was, I want out. He wants to leave the Suns, apparently. But when called about it and said, hey, you've tweeted, I want out. Does that mean you want to get traded? He said, no, 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 no. When I made that tweet, I was sitting at the hair salon and it was just taking too long. That's what I meant when I said I want out.
Can you believe that?
Well, general manager Ryan McDonough, the Suns have concluded that Eric Bledsoe really does want out, and he is on the trading block. So Bledsoe will almost certainly be playing for another team within a few weeks.
Yeah, he was sent home today. He's not playing against the Kings. But, you know, the interesting thing is that so Earl Watson, the head coach of Phoenix, was fired 3 games into the season. Now, 2 of those games were blowout losses by 40 points.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how do you even do that? I mean, that's a lot of work. But he didn't get fired because of Eric Bledsoe's tweet. That was Eric Bledsoe had gone to the GM and the owner during training camp and said, I want out of here. He'd been in Phoenix too long and seen what's going on. I think the Rockets might be a nice home for him. You know, they're losing Chris Paul for a month.
Yeah, so. Bledsoe's always been an above-average
mm-hmm.
player.
Mm-hmm.
Not a leader, not a superstar, but a guy who can really make a contribution.
Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure what's going on in Phoenix, but they got to turn that around. You know, they have 4 top 10 picks over the last 4 years, and they haven't been able to develop any of them.
Yep. It looks like a long season for the Suns.
Ooh, yeah.
Okay, I've got one more. He said, okay. We're going to conclude with a poignant one from the great Dwight Clark.
Oh, this is good.
Dwight Clark, who, of course, is most known for the catch in San Francisco in the NFC Championship game.
The Cowboys.
That's right. It was Montana to Clark with Everson Walls on the coverage. And it advanced, really changed, well, there's a changing of the guard. Elevated, that was the first time the 49ers went to the Super Bowl, and it really...
It's the beginning of their 18-year reign.
It began the Montana era.
Mm-hmm.
And Dwight Clark now suffering from ALS, and the team had a reunion yesterday. And Clark's, he said, comment that we'll anoint this week was, he said, I just wanted to see my teammates one last time.
How cool is that?
And Joe Montana, the whole cast came out and paid tribute to Dwight Clark, both as a player and as a man and as a teammate.
And they had handed out to everyone in Levi Stadium. Everyone got a T-shirt with Dwight Clark on the front, you know, different images of the catch, which was very, very cool and powerful. And he did his speech from, you know, he's in a wheelchair, from a box up top, and everyone was on their feet. It was really, really moving. And you got to credit 49ers ownership at the time, the DeBartolo family, Eddie DeBartolo, right by his side. And Dwight Clark just said, I couldn't be here without these guys. I mean, they had sent him to Japan for, you know, some sort of treatment for ALS, and it's a tough deal. It's a tough deal.
Well, our thoughts and prayers to Dwight Clark and
Absolutely.
His family. We give Dwight Clark the last word and his moment with his teammates yesterday.
Appropriately so.
When we come back, we'll give you an update on Monday Night Football and wrap up the David and Carla show.
The Boss and the Gloss continues now on SB Nation Radio with David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Well, it's been an intriguing Monday Night Football game. The Redskins jumped out in front, but the game is now tied 10-10 with just 40 seconds left in the second quarter. We're heading into the half with a tie game, although the Eagles are threatening to get on the board.
Got ourselves a game.
Yeah, pretty good Monday Night game. Well, we've covered a lot of ground today.
We really have. We've been all over the place.
I mean, for those who missed it, why don't you reaffirm it? Carla Dawson has gone on the record with her World Series pick. What do you predict?
Astros in six? What do you get? You didn't give yours.
Well, I'm in Houston. My heart is with the Astros, but my head says this Dodgers team is really exceptional. So I will analytically pick the Dodgers in 7.
You're going to sabermetric me with that pick?
I'm going to go sabermetric.
All right.
That's the only way
to
do
fair.
It.
That's fair. They're a juggernaut. I just hope it's a great series.
And then both. Other ground we've covered is that you are on board with the Justin Timberlake selection for the
all about that.
Super Bowl.
Yep.
Chris Tubbs is nodding. I mean, you feel good about it.
Give me a little JT. I love it.
With or without Janet Jackson?
Well, I take them either way.
You want them
both.
They
were a great duo. She's dynamic.
Okay.
But yeah, no, hey, JT solo, I'll take that too. It's good.
And then Tubbs in the corner, you're going to conclude that the Vikings will be playing in that Super Bowl in Minnesota.
Yes. The Minnesota,
ever the optimist.
The Minnesota Vikings will be playing the Houston Texans. And it's going to be such a great game that both those teams are going to win because everybody's a winner in that scenario.
Are you going to play California Dreamin' next? I'll take it, though. I love it.
See, the glass is half full.
I'm a glass half full person.
We call that the purple drank. I'm drinking that Kool-Aid right now, baby.
Who's going to be your quarterback? That's what I want to know.
You know, honestly, to me, I look at it this way. Case Keenum right now is leaving too many points on the board, leaving too many yards there. That defense can only carry you so far. I say Keenum right now gets you through the Cleveland game. You got to buy week 10. Look for the conversation to ramp up towards Teddy Bridgewater. Might not happen in week 10, but you're definitely going to start to hear a little bit of chatter. So I would not be surprised by the end of the year that Teddy Bridgewater could be under center. Might not be week 10, 11, 12, but
He'll be playoff ready.
I have a feeling that Teddy Bridgewater, yeah, he'll be Super Bowl MVP. He and Deshaun Watson both. It'll be co-MVP.
All right,
gosh, I love these bold predictions.
Just to go around, what we've concluded about quarterbacks, well, Teddy Bridgewater is going to lead the Vikings to the Super Bowl, but that's not our pick, Carla. Let's just for the record, that's Tubbs over
correct.
There. I don't want to be anywhere near that one. We've said that Deshaun Kaiser should not.
Watson. Oh, Kaiser.
Yeah, he should not be out after midnight.
That's right.
That's not going to help the Browns win, and it's not good optics.
Remember Mike Pearson's advice. The only thing open after midnight, hospitals and legs. Stay in, Deshaun.
Oh.
Yep.
That's interesting. Hospitals and legs. Okay, and then we've concluded that Sam Darnold might want to spend another year at USC.
I think so. What do you think, David?
I actually am always in favor of their staying another year. And particularly at the quarterback position, there's so much development to do.
And if the Jets keep playing like the Jets, they may not need him.
Well, that's right.
Let's be really optimistic.
I guess we're thinking Browns right now. It looks like
in school.
The Browns are going to take a quarterback this year, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I don't think he wants to go.
Kaiser has not proven to be the solution.
No, but Cody Kessler might be the man now because they tried Kevin Hogan. That one didn't work.
Goodness.
What a mess.
And then around the quarterback carousel, Carson Wentz leading the Eagles with a 5-1 record, and it looks like they're about to take the lead to close out the half, and credit the Eagles and Carson Wentz for getting off to a great start, and they, for the moment, have separated themselves from the rest of the pack in the NFL.
Game 1 World Series tomorrow.
Game 1 World Series tomorrow, Astros-Dodgers.
Not this time of year.
Very, very exciting week in sports and an exciting show with you. You've been listening to The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.